Hello and welcome to Coin Talk. In a professional studio this week, we'll see if that yields any results better for the show.
Like moving on up to downtown Brooklyn.
We're brought to you in partnership with Medium. Give someone the gift of Medium this holiday season. It's $50 a year, medium.com/gift. It all goes to support things like this show. Great writing, and lots of it is about crypto. All right, let's do it.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Tuesday, December 11th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $3,335.
Before we get going, there was an article that came out that was like hitting a parlay bet of like every Coin Talk topic all at once this week.
So what would those be, like scams?
Scams, like
ICOs.
Con men, fake beards, scammy ICOs, products that like don't even make sense described in a sentence.
Actually, not to give away the actual thing before you describe it, but I'm going to, before we get into it, say that it does make sense.
Wow, counter take before
we'll
the
there.
Take. Okay, so this was in The Block. Reporter's named Frank Chapro. Shouts to him. It's one of the better reported crypto stories during
it
our
is quite
talk
good,
run.
Yeah.
Basically, there was this ICO, $31 million ICO, to build what basically sounds like the Bloomberg terminal of crypto.
That's how they described it.
Yeah.
It was called BCT, and it was like, I guess, like, I don't know what the first word was, but like,
blockchain terminal.
No, I think it wasn't like Bloomberg crypto terminal, or I guess they couldn't call it Bloomberg.
I don't think that they went, it wasn't quite that bold.
It was B something crypto terminal. Whatever it was essentially like a Bloomberg terminal, which for those who don't know is like a proprietary thing that you can get stock information and financial information. It was for crypto.
Yeah. Faster than you can get on the internet.
Yes.
In the case of Bloomberg terminal.
Yes. And that's so you get like a small trading advantage, right?
Right.
Like, so if you are a Forex trader or something like that, rather than having like the Wall Street Journal publish a story about it and you read about it there, you get it much faster on the terminal.
Or like actual like proprietary data that is like at a slight lag if you're like loading on the internet.
Well, so what to you about this doesn't make sense? It seems to make sense to me.
Well, my first question is like what is like the source of all of this like proprietary crypto data, right? Like where is it being? I mean, Bloomberg has built a massive system that they charge, I think it's like $10,000 a year to get a Bloomberg terminal.
I don't know. I mean, I assumed it was more than that.
But maybe more than that. Maybe that's like if you get a bunch of them. Anyway, so this is like one of like the sea of ICOs that passed by in the last 18 months, most of which we will never talk about again. This one has a few special characteristics. So they did manage to get these terminals. They got a bunch of like celebrity crypto people to shell it, including our frequent topic, Ranran Noor of CNBC Africa.
Yeah, CNBC
Africa. He is just one of the people who was like, there's like a tweet from him like, just set up my BCT terminal. It is so great. I am now like trading like a master. So two conclusions from this story are the person who was behind all of this is actually a Canadian dude who was like convicted of a $800 million fraud and served some prison time and is definitely banned from doing anything of this kind ever again.
His name was Boaz Manor.
But just, I mean, top 10 names for this person.
Yeah. And one of the scams that, according to the story he ran, is that he was siphoning money out of his hedge fund and buying diamonds in Hong Kong and then having his sister fly to Hong Kong to like pick up the diamonds, and now the diamonds are missing.
Perfectly reasonable, perfectly legit. I'm sure there's a very reasonable explanation for it. So basically his whole methodology for getting back in the game with this ICO was that he grew a beard or made a fake beard?
He grew a beard.
I'm not sure whether the story says.
He dyed his beard red.
And so as this stuff started coming down and people started being suspicious, he had basically been going all over the country shilling this terminal to people. People Googled him and were like, that was that guy, except he had a beard now.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite bold, I would say. And do you remember when, like, Bobby Valentine got thrown out of a baseball game and then he put on, like, a phony hat and glasses and tried to sit back? And it was as a joke, you know? But, like, I'm always impressed by these criminals who think that, like, all they have to do is grow a beard and dye it red and then be high profile again, you know?
I've thought about this also with all these, like, El Chapo conspirators who got, like, plastic surgery. They all look totally crazy now. They're much more, like, obviously, like a criminal now that they've had massive facial surgery.
Yeah, like if you're in Mexico, for example, and you're in, let's say, like Sinaloa or something, and you see a man who has clearly had many, many plastic surgeries at the age of 45.
Yeah. What other explanation for being a Mexican man in your mid-50s with, like, massive layers of plastic surgery are there?
Be like, are you on television? And then be like, no, I'm not on television. Be like, oh, I see.
So this plot was far less elaborate than this. Long story short, they did not deliver a working terminal. It's unclear to me, like, what the plan even was here. When you read their description of what the BCD terminal does, they're like, oh, you can get, like, up-to-the-minute, like, price data and, like, social feeds and, like, articles from CoinDesk.
I've got it. Yeah. I've got it here. I want to read it out.
Okay.
All right. This is somebody who was very into BCD. His name is Michael Caponiti of Archimedes Fund Management, who was one of the people like Ramnarayan Nur who was going around saying that it's great. For crypto traders, it makes it easier to trade because you've got all the information right in front of you in one place. You've got the chat rooms, the social media news flows, and all the specific websites like Coinbase and all those types of flows.
Did they basically sell people the internet?
They're like basically selling people like a, you know, like a Windows system where you like put like your chat in one corner.
A dual monitor setup.
yeah, two monitors. And like, I don't know. To me, when I read that, I was thinking, I was like, how desperate were people to find one thing that made any type of sense to be suckered in by this? Or do you think anybody was suckered in? Like, how could you read that and say, oh, yeah, that's what I need. I need to buy, like, essentially, the, you know, like, Google Chrome and, you know, open new tabs. That's basically what they're describing here.
Okay. Now we have to denounce ourselves. It's that point in the program. That pitch, a Bloomberg terminal curve for crypto, does superficially makes more sense than some of the coins that we've held.
Well, okay.
What does Ubic do?
No. I was going to say, like, I feel like if I can't explain to you in any sense what the coin does, then that doesn't count.
Well, here's what I'm saying. This may be in the perfect sweet spot in that it sounds good and totally doesn't exist. We've already, like, uncovered on the show.
No, but it doesn't sound good.
Having a real product is a major hindrance.
But what about
and this product could never be built because there is no proprietary, like, source of, like, faster crypto data so far as I know. So it's, like, right in the, like, right pocket between real and totally made up. You can describe it, but you can't possibly make it.
I know. My favorite thing about this is that they felt like they needed, like, why do you need an ICO for this? You know, you're essentially making a piece of hardware.
Oh, because the token was going to, like, power the term. Oh, that was the, I've forgotten one of the most important details.
It was like an arcade machine?
The terminal was free, and you needed the token from the ICO to, like, power your terminal.
So it was literally like,
you had to like
it was like
stake
a
your own
it was
terminal.
Like a washing machine.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were like, "Oh, these are going to get speculated on as more and more traders use the free terminals." And supposedly all the people so they interviewed all these people who got sent a terminal
cuz
they sent it to all these crypto funds. They're like, "Here's a free terminal." And everyone was like, "Yeah, they said that a guy was going to come set it up, but the guy never showed up. So it just sat there for like 6 months not turned on and then we shipped it back." There's no I didn't see any photographs online that show a, like, active, turned-on terminal.
So what do you think they did? Do you think they, like, went and they bought, like, really cheap televisions and then they slapped a logo on it
and
then
shipped it out? I think
that's
possible. Do you know, like, the speaker scam where a guy comes up to you and is like, hey, I just got these speakers They put too many in the truck. They're $5,000 speakers. I'll give them to you for $200 if you'll just take them. Like, don't tell my boss.
Yeah, someone has asked me that.
Yeah.
Actually, in this neighborhood.
You get the speakers, and they work. They're just like $20 speakers in sort of fancy-looking casing. And this scheme has been defended by people who say it's not actually illegal. You're just, like, being greedy and getting suckered into buying some really cheap speakers for way too much money.
Yeah, I'm sympathetic to that take.
I believe that the BCT terminal is probably just like an LCD screen hooked up to a Raspberry Pi or something, right? Well, what else could it be?
I mean, I think that's ambitious to say they even had a Raspberry Pi.
Okay, it's
got
like a place that you could in the future put a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah. Like, you know, like when you go, this probably doesn't exist anymore, but when you would go, it did in Korea. So, like, when you go to Korea sometimes, Korea is very big into like having fake displays. So, if you go by a restaurant, there's like plastic food. And if you go into an electronics store, there's a lot of like televisions that are basically made out of cardboard. And I feel like this is like...
Oh, yeah. It's like the TVs at IKEA.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like an IKEA flat screen TV. Because an IKEA flat screen TV is cheaper than the cheapest LCD TV. But they probably make those for like 10 bucks each.
Yeah, because it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. But it's got like the amount of plastic that you'd expect from a TV.
I guarantee that what they did is like they went to like an IKEA and then they were like, we'll buy all your plastic.
Okay, this is a blind quiz. On the scale from the 0 being the most bullshit to 10 being the most legit ICO, where does this fit on the scale for you?
Ooh. Well, okay, the fact that their founder was a criminal.
Yeah,
and
not a real person.
And not a real person.
But then again, Sumo was not a real person,
and it's still
cooking.
Let me get to this.
Okay.
That goes against it, right?
Yes.
The fact that they could articulate a vision for it, right? And that some people, if you didn't stop to think, well, you know, like, what is this for? And, like, why can't I just, like, load this up on the internet? It kind of makes sense, you know? Like, and it wasn't that expensive.
It was free.
And then, like, the idea that, like, your coins would power it, you know, like you're playing Street Fighter or something like that, like, that, you know, that's crazy. So that's a point against it. But I would give it, like, a 6, maybe. What about you? Like
well, is, the coins powering it is no crazier than Ethereum.
Yeah, exactly. But also, like in terms of like the biggest strike against it, obviously, is that this guy dyed his beard red, you know, and that he decided to walk around with a new name.
Yeah.
But I will say that is it scammier to be a real person who is going to real meetings and is giving real people real instructions? Well, not real instructions, but, you know, fake instructions. Is that scammier than just having absolutely nobody and just having, like, some fake names and having absolutely nothing to do with any project?
Well, there were people who were deceived by his beard, which means that there were people who were working in good faith who thought he was a different person.
So that's
a plus.
Yeah, that's
there
a
were
plus.
Certain people who thought it was real. Unlike some of the things where, remember last week I said many altcoins would vanish from this earth without leaving a trace?
Yeah.
They made an actual fake terminal. So that means they had at least promotional swag, which means when all of this is gone, there still will be a BCT terminal in the crypto museum that I'm going to build in my basement. current collection, one Ripple hat.
Yeah. Well, I would say that it's a 6.
6? Okay.
Yeah.
So it's above average.
It's above average. It's less scammier than average because I think you and I remember that insane story about Skycoin, where like he was saying that the triads had broken into his house.
Listen to the CoinTalk archive, kidnapped by the triads episode.
And we weren't even really sure if this was a real person. We knew we were pretty sure that he had not been kidnapped by the triads.
Well, the people he was calling the triads was his own marketing team.
Yeah, they were
kidnapping him to get their back wages.
Like, I think that's like I think is like a 3. Because 1 on the scale for me is essentially a coin that has no team associated with it that was just created, might not even be on the blockchain, but was just traded on some exchange. And like one person created 50 of them at once and just, you know, was basically dumping out of them the second anyone bought into them. That's a 1 for me.
I'm going to go with you here. To me, it was a 5, But there's always the rare chance that you do something that's, like, totally bullshit and it accidentally works. And I feel like this one kind of fits that profile. Like, I could still see a really rich guy being like, I don't care, I'm still buying this crypto terminal.
Yeah. It could be, I think this is the second time I've mentioned this movie, but, you know, Small Time Crooks, the Woody Allen movie where Tracy Ullman starts baking cookies so that Woody Allen can, like, crack into a safe. And then
how often do you watch Small Time Crooks? Okay, Jay. I thought long and hard about how we could have a holiday show, coin talk.
Yes.
Yuletide coin. And I thought maybe this is probably our last or our second last episode of the year. And we also launched, our first episode was New Year's last year. So we're also celebrating 1 year of coin talk.
It feels like it's been 3 years.
I feel so much older.
Yeah.
What would you think about us, like, taking a walk through 2018 together?
Yeah.
Both through the lens of the episodes we did and Bitcoin price, and kind of remember where our heads were at different points in time.
Okay.
So we on January 9th, we put out our preview episode, which was entitled Ripple Mania and Sumo Feudalism. This was... So to give people an idea of where Bitcoin was, we had been taping the basement tapes when we crossed 10,000, and it's come back down to 10,000 in January 2018.
Yeah, I mean, I basically measured crypto everything in the Lammer Enthusiasm Index, right?
Yeah.
And so there, I think this was still around the time when you and me quietly were both thinking, you know, all of our real estate dreams are going to be fulfilled by crypto. You know, like that $4 million brownstone in Park Slope is going to be ours because UBIC is going to go through the roof and make us all rich.
I was definitely thinking I will totally sell my car for one Bitcoin. That would be a great deal for me.
Yeah, at that point, I think my car too, which is a bit newer than your car, I would have traded for one Bitcoin because I'm like, this car is not appreciating, but that Bitcoin, I can get two of these cars soon.
I'm going to go out and say that another crazy thing is I didn't even feel like at the time that Bitcoin was what was surging. We did Ripple Mania for the first episode. Ripple is what people were losing their mind over. And there was a real feeling, particularly because Ripple was so cheap, that Ripple, that there could be a, it's not a flippening when it's Ripple, a rippling.
Rippling, yeah.
And that was where, like, the true, like, speculative mania was. The overnight double return during that era when we taped the first show was with Ripple, I think.
Yeah, more than double, right?
Yeah.
Like, during that time, Ripple went from, like, 22 cents when you and I both owned some of it to all the way up to $3. So.
Yeah, and, like, had the whole history of Bitcoin in, like, a month and a half, it seemed like.
Yeah, yeah.
So by this point, like, Bitcoin already dropped one-third of its value in 24 hours on December 22nd, 2017. And then we were waiting for, there was going to be a 50% drop in the 16 days starting in February that would bring it to 7,000. So really, just as we were starting, everything was going to shit. We didn't know it, but it was a terrible time to start this podcast.
I know. If we had just started 6 months earlier and we had had things like, do you remember those, like, we've talked about this before, but remember those fake crashes where Bitcoin would go down like 60% and then would shoot back up to
Bitcoin
about 90%.
Banned in China crashes?
Yeah, or even like after that. I just remember, I think around Thanksgiving, like it crashed again and you and I were trying to like catch the bottom and ride it all the way back up top.
I feel like Bitcoin hasn't gotten banned by China for 6 months. We need to start
banned.
The market.
Fake
again. Yeah.
If we had started back then, I think that we would have had a little bit more optimism around the show. And for those who think that the show is too negative, you know, just think about when we started. You know,
yeah.
We essentially started in the Great Depression. We were born into crypto impoverished times.
All right. Our second episode was with your friend, Nathan Park.
Yep.
Who is, it was about the Korean market.
And I will say that to this point, now that we're 1 year in, that was one of our most informative.
I would say that in terms of
episodes.
Actual usable knowledge, we may have peaked in the second episode. It's been all downhill since
yeah.
then.
Well, at some point, we abandoned the idea that this would be an informative podcast.
But it did come full circle because last time we were talking about, did BitHum prop up that 6,000 price with some combination of Wash Trading and Super Airdrop Festival. And that kind of gels with what Nathan Park said, which was, A, these markets are highly manipulated, there's huge spreads, and that's because they're widely used for Chinese money laundering.
Yes.
Chinese money laundering is not price sensitive. It's just as useful at any price. These aren't people who are hodling. They're people who are coming in and out of the currency rapidly to disguise financial transactions.
Yeah, and that volume, right, of large amounts of money being processed through Bitcoin had a price effect, and that people in Korea were trying to speculate on what was essentially like massive amounts of money being moved out of China through Korean Bitcoin exchanges. And all of that got shut down because of like know your customer law. Not all of it, I'm sure, but a lot of it got shut down because of that sort of stuff.
And I think that was an emerging theme for us to sort of counter there, that some of the use cases for Bitcoin exert positive price pressure. Some of them are just really useful at any price. And now that Bitcoin is $3,000, pretty much exactly the same if you're a Chinese money launderer.
Yeah, and we would say, I think the thing that we have learned is that the ways in which Bitcoin are actually used are all not sensitive to price. Like, it doesn't matter. You know, if you're buying some drugs with Bitcoin, it really doesn't matter what the price of Bitcoin is, right? Because you're putting money into Bitcoin and then you're selling it off, getting your drugs, and then that drug dealer most likely is not, like, his transaction is not dependent on the price of Bitcoin.
Well, the only way it would matter is if that drug dealer, like, hodls.
Yeah.
You know.
But then you just find another drug dealer.
Well, but if all the drug dealers hodled, then there would be a shortage of new Bitcoin to buy for the people who want to buy the drugs. But I think with drug dealers and Chinese money launderers, we're basically talking about people who want to go back to fiat as quickly as possible.
Yeah, or like put it in like a, you know, Park Avenue apartment or something like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, on January 19th, with Bitcoin still above $10,000, I think we don't even need to say anything about this one. I'm just going to say, we survived the crash with Doug Kim.
The first in like a 5-part series.
Have you heard? I have not. Doug has not said anything in the Telegram for like 3 weeks.
I talked to Doug quite
a bit.
Yeah, he's doing all right. Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, so first time Tether comes up on January 30th. And I remember this was, Tether had obviously not destroyed the market at this point. But I remember one of the last things we said about Tether was, I have a feeling we'll be hearing from Tether again.
Yeah, it was one of our prescient moments.
Yeah, I think that was one of our correct calls.
Yeah, and we also were skeptical about Tether.
Yes.
Like, we didn't think... We thought that something was going on, if I seem to remember right. Not to turn this whole thing into a litigation of whether or not you and I were right.
Well, I like our general call that it doesn't, like, I feel like crypto dudes always want to, like, argue with us that Tether is or is not a fraud.
Yeah.
My argument is it does not matter. If there's the perception that there may be a fraud in the system is less safe.
Yeah, and if your response to you're a fraud, and this is from Tether and Bitfinex, is to be like, well, we don't even really exist, so how would you know? Then you're like, look, I'm going to put a little more cash behind this fraud bet here.
Yeah. It also kind of exposed me, like, the first time I realized that, like, Tether and Bitfinex were run by the same person, that, like, almost all of these profitable crypto ventures are just, like, Wizard of Oz, like, one guy, like, jumping in is, like, the, like, owning all of them. If the money moves between the miners or the exchanges or whatever, it kind of seems like the same people are able to take advantage of it over and over.
Yeah, Jihan Wu.
Although Jihan Wu, I would say, is a character faded from view.
Yeah.
Jihan Wu needs a new publicist, and he needs to come on this show.
I feel like Jihan Wu has done that purposefully, don't you?
Surrounded himself with mystery?
Yeah, why would he be public right now? He's probably implicated in, like, all sorts of international financial problems, you know? Like, he doesn't need to be out there, like, having fights with, like, Niraj on Twitter or something like that.
Then on number 8, we had our friend Adrian Chen on. I am disappointed. I was hoping that during the run of the show, we would have been able to say, Adrian, if you had just bought when you made your first Coin Talk appearance, you'd have this much money. He'd actually have less money.
He'd have a third as much money.
So Adrian got the last laugh on us. I feel like since we had him on above 10,000, we should, out of respect, have him on now. Bowing low.
Yeah, but also, you know what? Like, the first time Adrian wrote about Bitcoin, it was worth $14 each. So he would still be doing very well.
He's still a loser in my book.
He's still a huge loser.
We did a show on February 20th. So this is, like, after really a bunch of the ground has been lost. We don't know it, but, like, We've lost most of the ground at this point.
Well, how would you, okay, February 20th, around the time when we talked to Adrian, how would you have characterized your mood at the time?
My mood was, we got to stick it out through this long winter. Like, it's painful to look at this Bitcoin 8,000, but like, I know it'll be back above 10,000 soon.
I think I was similar to you, but I was starting to lose hope.
I was like, man, I might have to even wait till this summer for a new all-time high.
Yeah, that's true.
So we did a show on Zcash and Monero, which we identified as, for me, it was the most interesting subset of coins, and it probably still is. That said, nothing has developed in this space since then. I don't have anything new to say about Zcash.
I actually wanted to pause here for a second and ask if, because you were very bullish on these privacy coins, and I agreed with your general sentiment, which was that of the things that you can imagine in your world that you would ever need to use cryptocurrency on, you'd be like, well, maybe one day I need to buy like a fake identity, or I need to buy drugs, or I need to buy a gun and or passports or whatever.
I would even say, like, from a more zoomed out perspective, if you could have all of your crypto transactions be private, why would you not?
Sure, I agree. How do you feel about it now?
Well, I still believe in the general hypothesis, but it really hasn't mattered with regards to price. Just, I could say the same thing about Ripple, which I think I don't believe in even 1%. I don't think it really mattered for price. Like, looking right now, Monero is below where I bought it more than a year ago. It's $42 now after reaching a high, I think, of somewhere in the $300 range. So I feel good about our use hypothesis of privacy coins, but I feel like maybe those things don't really matter.
I'm not necessarily talking about the price. I'm just talking about, okay, let's talk about Zcash, right? Because Monero is just, it's just one guy, basically, and we don't know that much about him except that he has, like, expensive watches.
No, he's got, like, there's a whole Monero community.
But with Zcash, right? Yeah. Like, Zcash was the most pedigreed of all of these and credentialed of all of these projects. And it's hard to imagine that the people who are involved in it would just not do anything for a while, right? And you would think that of all the people, they would believe in the buildle mentality more than anybody else. But there has been the only news that you've heard about Zcash is that when Coinbase accepted it, they said that you can't use it anonymously, you know? So it's actually just a worthless, like, token that operates.
You can have
just,
it
like,
transferred to you anonymously, but you can't get money out with it anonymously.
Yeah.
So you basically
have to reveal yourself.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you told me that Zcash was going to be on Coinbase and Gemini at the end of the year and the price would be under the $100, I would have told you were crazy. Zcash has had the best string of news possible.
Best PR.
Fawning profiles of Zuko.
Yep.
It doesn't matter. Like, it has not mattered for price. I file both of these coins just in the same place that we ended up in that Korean discussion where we said, if you're really using the privacy stuff coming out, if you're trying to obscure stuff, price doesn't matter. You're not, like, sitting in the coin.
Yeah.
So I feel like my overall hypothesis there was wrong. Its utility made it less valuable. It's really useful, and therefore, it's not going to get as speculated on.
Okay, I'm going to go one step further than you, and I will say that Zcash probably hasn't almost never been used to make an anonymous transaction.
Not like a high stakes one. No, I mean, I'm sure some people have done it like as a test.
Yeah,
but it's not being used in that way.
Yeah, like if I bought you lunch, for example, and you're like, I will pay you in Zcash and it'll be anonymous, and I'd be like, oh, that's funny. Yeah, like that's it. That's the only way that it was ever used. And I guess my general concern about these projects is that once the price went, all of their messaging about how great their technology was all disappeared. And it's not just because the press stopped covering it. It's literally these people all disappeared. And that's concerning because, like, if something like Zcash, which has such a credentialed background, also has that happen to them, then, you know, that makes me feel like, you know, maybe they were like a 7 on the scammy scale instead of what I would say was like
Zcash?
A 10
like
on
a
the scammy
2
scale.
On the scammy scale.
Wait, which one's the highest?
10.
Oh, 10. No, a 3.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't question any of their motives. I just question the stupidity of my own investment hypotheses, which are the things that I think are the good product or what I'm investing in, and I don't think that really it matters very much for coin pricing.
Yeah,
it feels like everything is falling
Bitcoin. But with Zcash, they did have all that stuff where, like, the founders had, like, an enormous portion of the coins, you know?
Yeah, no one's doing this out of the goodness of their heart. Yeah. That's the theme. On February 23rd, we had Maria Bustillos on the show talking about Civil.
Oh, my God.
I'll say, at that time, I didn't even think that the Civil token sale was going to... Like, I was like, oh, sure, you're going to do a sale, whatever. Like, I didn't think that there would be a whole story about it.
I thought they were going to do the sale, but I did not expect them to become, like, one of the top five crypto stories of the year.
I thought we would talk about Civil to people in crypto, and no one would have any idea what we're talking about.
Yeah, we would talk to crypto. We would talk about Civil to journalists, and they would also not really know what we were talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly.
But we were wrong on both accounts.
On February 28th, we did the One Strongman ICO about the Venezuelan Petrocoin.
Oh, that's a good episode.
Debacle. Another story I've never heard of again. What's going on with the Petrocoin?
No. That one keeps going. I mean, like, you know, they're still trying to put their petroleum assets into cryptocurrencies, and nobody still knows what's happening with it, or, like, there's not really been that much transparency. But you know, like, the people in charge in Venezuela are not wavering from that idea. They still think it's a good idea, and, you know, the only asset that they have anymore is oil reserves, and so they feel like they need to do it through cryptocurrency for reasons that I don't understand, but are probably linked to, like, mass corruption.
To me, them continuing to do that is like trying to keep working on the terminal project. I mean, you can keep saying you're going to do it, but... okay, then we did... March 15th, we did an episode on the Mt. Gox trustee dumping on everyone. Remember that?
Oh, God.
That's another story. Is that over? Has that all been dumped, or we still could get one of those in the state we're in now?
Hopefully he was smart enough to dump out completely before now.
Yeah.
But, and at this point, he might, like you, be like, well, I might as well ride this thing out. But, that was back in the days when, you know, one person could affect the crypto market in that way, which seems like a long, long, long time ago.
I think there was actually some other whale who was dumped. They were, like, saying that a bunch of this, like, most recent fall was some dude who has, like, a 2013 wallet with $2 billion in it.
And he's just dumping. Sold it all?
He's been dumping, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Good for
Not him. All of it, but people saw him starting to dump, and they're like, oh, that's a lot that he could dump.
Yeah.
We did that episode about the blockchain. Have we talked about the blockchain in, like, 6 months? Does anyone care about the blockchain anymore?
No. When's the last time you saw an IBM blockchain ad?
I haven't been watching that much NBA streaming, but yeah. I haven't seen it for months.
Yeah, you know what? That would be a good episode for us next year is, like, what happened to the IBM blockchain.
Oh, I thought you were going to say an oral history of the IBM blockchain commercial.
Yes, obviously. That was what I was going to say. No, what happened to the blockchain? What happened to the IBM blockchain? I mean, do you remember how many ads there were about it? Like, IBM basically went...
It merged with that terminal. It's inside the terminal.
IBM basically went a Kodak coin, and essentially it seemed like it was swinging a lot of its operations towards, like, this blockchain lab. And at the time, you and I, mostly being in assholes, you know, joked that we thought it would be, if you walked into IBM's blockchain lab, there'd be like four dudes on a computer and then like 60 marketing people, you know. But it seems like maybe that was true.
Well, the thing here, like, we heard so much about it, the blockchain, not Bitcoin, and this idea that somehow blockchain could survive without a surging asset attached to it.
No.
Does that seem like a viable nowadays?
I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, do I still think blockchain could be used for certain specific tasks in a cool way? Yes. I think you do too, right?
Yeah.
Do I think that there is a whole new industry that can be built out of blockchain and that will replace the internet? Like, that seems impossible right now.
I remain interested in the, like, decentralized web stuff, but the, like, blockchain itself, there's something that seems almost cruel about this sort of, it's a machine for trust stuff. Like, we kicked off this show about a guy who did an ICO with a fake beard. No one should be using trust to, like, categorize this nascent marketplace. It's one of the least trustworthy places. And I think we went out pretty early on the idea that who cares if this, like, fruit plantation uses the blockchain to track their fruit from a seed to crop. if people are corrupt, they're going to figure out how to corrupt the blockchain. And nothing has changed my opinion about that at all.
Yeah. That was the art thing too, remember? We're like, well, you could just swap the painting at any point in this blockchain and, you know, everybody else would just be fine with it because they wouldn't know.
A place that says it's going to protect you from scammers is a pretty good place for scammers.
Yeah.
If the people are like, this is scammer proof, scammers are like, really?
Well, it also, if something it was started as being this for the art market is scammer proof, it was most likely started by a scammer to scam you.
So now we're getting into the long 6,000s, the long flat 6,000s Bitcoin period.
Yeah, so what's the date?
So on April 6th, we did an episode with Ledger Status, The Fundamentals Remain Strong, where we concluded this is when Bitcoin was worth twice as much as it is right now. That the fundamentals were the same, so we didn't understand why the price was down.
The 6,000s were in April?
I think so, yeah. I'll double check.
Good Lord. So we hovered there for how long? Like 6 months or something like that?
Yeah. Let's see.
So I've been I was a no-coiner for the majority of the show.
Yeah, that was that was pretty damn close to the year. I mean, well, in April, it started at like 9,000, 7,400 by May, 6,300 in June, 7,700 in July, 7,000 in August. So we're basically in a $7,000 chop there for kind of a long time. I mean, that's most of the year.
Yeah.
That was our long boredom period. We did Alt Spring on the Campus Quad that first day that it came out. That was April 13th. Then after that, we had the return of FOMO Kang in April. I think this was like when it went from like 6,000 to 7,500. We saw a little FOMO Kang again. ZRX gets added to Coinbase April 27th. We predicted a big year for ZRX. I think there's a lot of positive stuff happening for ZRX. Did you see that stuff with Coinbase where you can like put any asset onto a website and it does like a transaction with ZRX in the background to like you can buy any ERC-20 token on the web?
No. But why would you, like what, to like, you can use it to buy like Amazon products?
Well, it uses it to do like some sort of like a semi-off-chain swap that allows, like, that's what's going to open up all these other Coinbase shitcoins.
Oh, well, that's good for ZRX.
Yeah, a lot of good things happening for ZRX, not a lot of price action resulting from that. I mean, either this stuff's all like a coiled spring that's going to explode here, or we're just like grabbing good news as the ship goes down, right?
Yeah, I think that's probably more like the number of people who are going to trade based on news and technological developments is very low right now.
In May, I got Bitcoin ransomed. Remember that?
Oh, that was great.
So this is an interesting one. In May, you went to the Ethereal Summit where there was the CryptoKitties auction. And I remember—
That was in May?
That was in May. And I remember one detail from that stuck with me, which was that Novogratz was like, you should buy CryptoKitties. They're probably going to be worth millions. Like, it still kind of felt like all of the, like, underlying scarce elements of crypto were all going to be worth a lot of money.
To not misquote Mike Novogratz, what he did was that some guy bought a crypto kitty for $140,000 or something.
Yeah.
And he said, he got a really good deal. It's probably going to be worth more than that. And, you know, like on the scale of things that are epically wrong, you know, that between that and crypto kitties are going to be worth millions is not that big because they're both really, really wrong.
Would you rather have lost, like have a bunch of money in underwater shit coins on Cryptopia right now or a bunch of money in crypto kitties?
It's not even close. I'd much rather be underwater on crypto kitties. So these crypto kitties, you know, like, it's a thing.
Do you still have your crypto kitty? Didn't you have a crypto kitty? Let's check in with your crypto kitty.
I think I have, like, 6 crypto kitties.
Have you checked the value of these crypto kitties?
No, but I co-own them with, like, a guy who works at Vice. So he has all the login stuff. So
What did you pay for those crypto kitties?
$40, I think. And then we bred them. But CryptoKitties at least has, like, some interesting provenance idea behind it, you know, and, like, uniqueness ideas behind it. And it's not insane. Well, it's insane, but it's not as bad as, like, having, like, you know, SumoCoin or like, Zcash Classic or any of these coins that spiked on Cryptopia or Tron and that are completely worthless and are not real projects. CryptoKitties is a real project.
I am waiting for CryptoKitties Generation 2. ideally like nested within some kind of a video game. So it's not just, I mean, one of the big problems with CryptoKitties is like there's no interface for it. It's no fun.
It's not fun.
That's probably the product we're looking for, right? That's like going to start the market.
Yeah, and the other problem with CryptoKitties, I think the reason why partially it was not fun was that like all the fucking kitties look the same, you know?
Yeah.
Like all you do is get like a different color.
I thought we would be on like CryptoKitties 2 or 3 by now. Not literally, but that people would take this idea of scarcity and fun and trading and Pokemon-like dynamics and go totally crazy with it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, we've talked about this a lot on the show, but, you know, like a skins economy where you even, like, dress your fucking CryptoKitty up and you have specific hats and then the CryptoKitties go walk around somewhere. Like, it's not that hard to design, you know? Like VR chat, which is that game where you just make a weird avatar and walk around some VR landscape and people talk to each other. It's really not that hard of a game to design. Just have a place where the cats fucking walk around and you can put a hat on the cat and everyone's like, oh, nice fucking hat, you know? And you'll be like, that'll be $20,000. I would play that game, you know? I think you would play that game too. And like the fact that that hasn't been developed is bizarre to me. Maybe that's what Decentraland is in some ways, but like,
I think that's one of the possible outcomes. We still need to do our Decentraland episode. But in general, I feel like all of this scarce stuff, it doesn't work until you can show it off. Like Supreme, you have to have Supreme.
Yeah.
It can't be invisible Supreme.
Yeah, it can't just be like auto wallet, you know, that you can only show to your crypto nerd friends.
Yeah, you can't get people excited with just the super airdrop festival. Eventually, you have to actually drop something.
Yeah.
Okay, now, this is probably my favorite episode of the entire year. It took place on a yacht.
Oh, yeah.
So that was May 24th.
God.
There were still Aston Martins being given away on a yacht.
Yeah. Yeah.
Two of them.
Yeah. What happened to that guy? He bought like the most expensive house in Toronto, right?
Well, I mean, he's like an F mega whale.
Yeah.
So he's got a lot less money now, but he's probably doing fine.
I'm sure he's doing fine.
Jax Decentral Liberty, probably the most ambitious project we described. What do you think the vibes are like at the Jax Decentral
Liberty?
Did
it launch ever? It's been 6 months. It launched.
Yeah.
So Jax Decentraland.
It's like it's an app. You can get it on your phone.
And like
it's got its own token. It's like the dust of your transactions.
And can you still buy like cards? Like the prepaid cards?
I don't think none of that second level shit came out. It's just like an app, I think.
Like, didn't they have like basically Apple TV?
And a set-top box.
Yeah.
And like, a collectible card game.
Did any of that come out?
I don't know. I did not do my Jax research before this episode.
I mean, I think that those guys are probably all fine. I wonder what the co-working space mood is. Remember, like, the first part of their video is like, this is an amazing co-working space. You're like, what are we being sold here? And then suddenly there's a man with a penguin backpack walking through like a white wasteland.
I mean, if I had to give a lecture on this whole crypto era, I would show that like 15-minute self-produced 3D animation Jax Decentral Liberty and be like, this cost over $1 million to produce and someone was riding high enough that they made this vanity video and showed it on a yacht party where they gave away two Aston Martins.
Yeah, and then I'd have them read the Bloomberg crypto terminal story. I mean, like, this was this year.
I can just only imagine, I mean, you know, Consensus had their 15% layoffs or something.
20%, yeah.
It doesn't seem like people thought a lot about what was going to happen. Like, when everyone was like, I'm not concerned with price. Like, I don't give a shit. It's like, no one really considered the morale implications of this stuff. And I feel like Jax Decentral Liberty, before they had that yacht party, like, how you act at the top is going to affect how confident people are down here.
Or how much they're willing to hear your bullshit again.
Yes.
You know? Like, I don't think that there's anything that guy can sell again. Because if I was, like, in opposition research again for some other company that was a competitor of his, I would just, like, email everybody and be like, hey, to check out this fucking video, you know? That video would have made more sense as, like, a signal of the top, you know, and a crash is about to happen. But unfortunately, like, those types of things kept happening.
Like, you can't just produce it. Like, if you start producing it at the top, you can't just make a penguin backpack movie at night, Jay.
Yeah, with an animated, like, stadium that he flies into.
Remember this thread? June 20th, Steve Bannon came out as being into Bitcoin. Haven't heard about his holdings for a while. What happened to Crypto Bannon?
I don't know, but the real Steve Bannon is more influential than ever, which, you know, I think maybe the second he realized that he could say vaguely socialist things and that, you know, dumb leftists would glom onto his ideas, especially in Europe, that maybe he was like, maybe I don't even need this crypto thing anymore. Like, I felt like he was doing...
Steve Bannon?
Yeah. Yeah.
Socialism? What?
No, he's not a socialist, but they're like leftists who will say like, well, Steve Bannon is right about most things.
I've never heard of the narrative thread you're describing, but I don't even... It's just going to rile me up. So, we all talked about Skycoin. Never heard about Skycoin again after that. The guy's probably still being held by the triads.
Yeah. Or he's like in a really nice apartment.
We did our Tezos episode. Again, I thought we'd be hearing a lot more about Tezos this year.
Yeah, okay, so that one actually let's pause and talk about for a little bit because, like, we had Gideon on, who is a great journalist, you know, and who I think shared a lot of our thoughts about crypto and was probably much more educated and smart about crypto than we were. And he seemed to have some faith in this project, you know. He thought that bad things had happened with it, but that it was a real thing.
Was it a real faith in the project or a faith in the intentions of the founders, though?
More the latter. But I guess my point is, like, this was a huge, huge, huge sale, right? And the fact that they didn't even make it to the point where they're being discussed at all anymore, or that they're not a real product at all anymore, right?
Like, Ledger was telling us to load up on those Tezzies.
Okay, look, I mean, I know that Ledger listens to the show, so I'm... but I will say that, like, I'm just never going to buy a cryptocurrency based on a DA chart ever again, even though I think that a lot of his charts are probably right and that his instincts are right. I just can't do it. Like, I'm never going to buy an altcoin again.
Well, the thing about Tezos and the good intentions, and I feel like it took us the first half of the show to figure this out, was that good intentions might even be a problem. Like, this is the problem may have been they actually were trying to do it.
Yeah.
Tezos would have been better off if the founders and that scammer South African dude had joined forces and scammed everyone.
Yeah.
Instead, they've just gotten a huge fight that's lasted multiple years.
I know.
But as always, I would like to say the people who are the deepest into crypto are terrible at running things, terrible at governance. I still don't understand what governance means with regards to this. And... not one of these projects have I been like, that person really led this team through a storm. Like, they had a great year. Like, right. Who had a great year? I guess Bitcoin had a great year. The maximalist had a good year.
The year-end question, I think, is, if you want to ask the real, who was like the MVP of 2018, who would you say?
Well, earlier we were calling it for Bitcoin maximalists, but I do feel like the recent drops have kind of undermine their MVP case.
What about aside from something like short sellers or something like that, which would be the obvious choice?
I think the MVP of the year is everyone who made money in crypto in 2018, and that's exchanges, probably miners. Like, it's all the people who
got crushed at the end of the year. Who had a good
exchanges didn't get crushed.
Who they did in the sense that volume went way down.
Yeah, but they make money either way. Like, they made money while the making was good. They made money hand over fist. Like, these companies, and I'm including Coinbase in there. When you look at the value of Coinbase as compared to the value of all the crypto as a whole, Coinbase has
I totally agree with you.
Yeah, and that wasn't clear until this year because their profits were the same. And everyone else's profits went way down.
I'm more talking about who had a great year from beginning to end. And the only person I think about is Bitfinex.
He had a good year.
He had a good year. He ended up with an SEC investigation.
I think Brian Armstrong.
Oh, Justice Department investigation.
Yeah. I would say actually that the regulators had a pretty good year.
Yeah.
They kind of
Giancarlo.
They threw cold water and acted kind of rational without acting crazy.
Yeah.
They didn't people wanted to say, they didn't know what they're doing, but it kind of seems like they do know what they're doing.
Yeah, and they weren't I don't know. Noah Smith wrote a op-ed in Bloomberg about what to make of all this crypto, what happened to crypto last year. And I didn't think it was like particularly illuminating for people who are into crypto. But one thing that I think he said that was true was that none of the apocalypse scenarios happened in crypto that people thought it would happen. You know, there's no huge exchange hack.
Yep. That's another reason I think the exchange has won this year.
There is no regulatory action. In fact, the regulators seemed kind of kind to crypto.
And there weren't even any good fake Chinese bans.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think regulators were pretty good about it. So yeah, maybe they're winners. I mean, unless you think that their laxness was also what led to things like, you know, Bloomberg Crypto Terminal.
I know that I was pretty hyperbolic about the dangers that crypto presented to government. Do you think government and regulators maybe looked at crypto and went like, hey, you guys, there's a good chance these fucking guys flame out on their own. Like, let's not give them the power of shutting them down. Let's just pull a little of the oxygen out of the room. We're not going to let the ETF happen. We're going to let this run its natural course and not interfere because it's actually great for crypto if we do interfere.
I totally buy that.
And so I'm going to go. I think that they won. I think the U.S. I think the government won.
That's a brilliant take. And once you said it, I was like, oh, of course that's what they're doing. Yeah.
And they'll wait and see. And if it gets dire, they're going to like intervene. But like Bitcoin's not a threat. Like as long as Bitcoin is down 90%, this is not its point of maximum threat.
No. 80%, and also
whatever
like
it is now.
I think that they probably didn't want to make a mistake that was going to make it all even more fucked up. And if they're just like, well, we'll just see what happens. Who cares? It's really not that many people in it. Like, you know, like I think they made the right choice.
Okay. This is one that I haven't checked back in a while. July 9th, Excerpt Toshi announces that he's going to be dropping a memoir. Has that come out?
No.
What happened?
I think it comes out in January.
Comes out in January. Yeah. Okay. Let's just put a bookmark on that one. that actually reminds me. On January 3rd, we're doing our first ever live show.
Really?
Yeah. You were unaware of this? You confirmed that you would be able to attend.
I just like click yes on all Google invites.
You're coming.
Okay.
We're going to do a set. Marty Bent, Tales from the Crypt, is going to do a set. It's all part of Iterative Capitals. It's the 10th anniversary of the mining of the Genesis block.
Are we getting paid?
We're not getting paid.
God damn it.
I'll put the link in the show notes. You can get tickets. I think it's $10. But my plan was for us to do our long-awaited Satoshi as Literature episode, which I think we can't help. But when you talk about literature, I know that you're a literate man. You talk about doubles, mirrors. There's no way to talk about Satoshi without talking about Excerpt Toshi.
No. I feel like we should drop our Excerpt Toshi take, our hottest Excerpt Toshi take onto the audience there.
Well, okay, so hopefully, if the book comes out January 1st, there's a possibility we'll have read it. If we haven't read it, I think we should fictionalize a sort of a fan fiction account of what we imagine the book is going to be like.
Yeah, instead of like the excerpts where Excerpt Toshi is telling you what the book will be about, we'll just make up a fake Excerpt Toshi excerpt.
Late July, again, Augur comes out. It's another thing that's like, wow, this is like a big threat.
Yeah,
decentralized assassination markets. Everything's going to like blow up. And then people just kind of stopped using it.
Yeah, because it took 18 minutes or 2 days to sync the
chain. Our take was right there, which is none of these dApps are useful. And that was true when we started and it's still true.
Yeah.
We could talk about why, but it doesn't, for most people, really matter why. Like, have we gotten a satisfying answer why Alice is so hard to use?
No.
Okay, let's, we did a mailbag. September, we talked about EOS. I feel like there was there was some like EOS attention there. Remember EOS was going to launch? Whatever happened with that?
Who did we talk to EOS about?
Brady Dale.
Yeah. And like we could not figure out
Well, first you got to get the bakers. Now the bakers need to.
No, that's Tezos, right?
EOS is something else.
EOS is something else where there's a council of nine, you know, and like that changed every 15 seconds or something like that.
I used to feel bad when we got shit like this wrong, but I'm just declaring bankruptcy. I'm not going to keep how Tezos and EOS work separate in my head. If that's important to you, just stop listening to the show.
Yeah.
Getting up pretty close to present day. Where we probably remember what we talked about. Final thoughts. The year as a whole, what surprised you?
In 2018?
Yeah.
Ooh. If I'm being honest, I will say that I thought in, you know, sometime around like a little more than a year ago, when you and I were both way up in crypto and we both had like 40% of our portfolio or more in shitcoins, I thought that some of these projects would be a little bit more real, yeah. You know? Like, I thought that something like Ubik or, you know, like Waves even, or like that something out of all this crap that was going out would sort of conform and that things would fall into sharper focus, and what you would see is that you would like eventually like squint and you'd see like an office building, you know, and in that office building you'd see people doing real work and they were building something and they were making partnerships and that they would like put out a beta or something like that that worked and was exciting. And I think what shocked me is that here we are like a year later, after all this price action, after all this ink has been spilled about crypto, all these projects have begun and ended. And that we kind of are in the same place in terms of like a functional, usable product in crypto. And I think that if, like, you know, like I can hear people screaming right now being like, yeah, but it's in its infancy. But, you know, like we basically went year of an infancy and like didn't learn how to say data, you know, yeah. Which I think is concerning.
Yeah, something's wrong with our baby.
Yeah, something's wrong with our Ubik bag.
I think I agree with your take. It reminds me a little bit, coming from a vaguely product software development related background, to like you're working on some team that's at like a satellite campus, and the boss flies in. He's yeah. like, "Let me see the product," and it doesn't work. And he's like, "What the hell? Like, this better work next time I'm here." And it's like, he comes back again. He's like, "It still doesn't work. What the hell have you guys been doing?" It's like, well, we did a bunch of work. It just still doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to see the change between a more developed but still not working product. And I don't think we have any real perspective right now. Like, I'm prepared to be totally surprised and for it to be one of those things where it's like, holy shit, we didn't know this was all coming down the pipeline right behind us. And God, if there is anything in the pipeline, put it out now.
So you remember like 18 months ago or something when we first both got into crypto, even before the basement tapes, that one of the ideas that was always floated as being a possibility, like an easy thing to accomplish with the blockchain as it was composed in the middle of 2017, it was like buying flight insurance, right? They're like, oh, flight insurance is really annoying to buy. Yeah. And you could use a provenance system using the blockchain and you could make a ton of transactions and go shopping for flight insurance. I've never bought flight insurance in
that
my entire life.
It's the least fun sounding product I could
have. I'm not talking, yes, but I'm just saying, like, just like give me a fucking flight insurance app, you know, yeah. or something, just something. And I don't know, the fact that so little has come out has been both surprising and a bit dispiriting to me. And the more that you promise that the future is going to look like this and the, you know, like there is a grace period in which people are willing to use their imaginations to fill that in. But when it is accompanied by them, A, losing a lot of money, and B, also like having these sort of catastrophic hints, you know, where you're like, oh, here's our new thing, and then it doesn't work, you know, like Augur, for example, then I think people's patience starts to wear a little bit thin. And this is not to say that crypto should be further along than it is, but I think that the bad actors in crypto have shortened the timeline of people's patience for waiting on this world. I don't know if that makes sense.
I think that makes sense, and you have to assume there's just more bad actors coming.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's only going to get worse before it gets better.
I know. Well, sometimes I think, like, dude, maybe we shook out all the bad actors. I'm like, no, there's so many con men in this world.
Yeah.
Like, you and I would be putting out CoinTalk Coin if we had just known what we knew.
I feel like that's being like a, you know, like an FBI investigator shutting down like a pyramid scheme and being like, finally, there's no more pyramid schemes in America.
We took out Initiative Q and now we're all done.
Yeah. I think I agree with your overall take. And I continue, I think we started off the year being really interested in these Robin Hoods and these Coinbases and people who are basically trying to be your crypto user experience. And Toshi, which I didn't even mention when we were going through, but that was coming out right about a year ago. Brian Armstrong, a little bit more maybe even. And they were all this idea that you're going to have this like contiguous like AOL universe kind of identity and crypto where you did everything. And we talked in the last episode about the only fun thing that anyone figured out to do is trade.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they're just trading apps.
Yeah.
And trading sucks when the market's down. This is not a good time to be day trading.
You can't like short it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even if you can short, like this.
No, it'd be fun if you could short it, I think.
You could, I mean, you could like, get BitMEX if you want to short it.
You can't like short it on GDAX.
I don't think the solution is to make gamified shorting easier for people in legitimate apps. I think we'll always find the gambling stuff fun, but the two things I've found fun in crypto have been trading and like getting into all these weird little like projects, which was ultimately a terrible idea, but I had fun at the time, and talking to people about crypto, which is our grand unified theory that everyone is lonely in crypto. And those have been great. It was enough to get me in the door, but I need something new. I need something new to be interested in.
What do you think that's going to be, though? Or what could it be?
If I had to bet right now, I would bet that it's gaming and it's unique items and games, and that the next place we're having fun is like trading something in some kind of a gaming virtual universe.
Like a CryptoKitties hat.
Or like, you know, we're logging on to some VR game and like you can like trade like different outfits. And I'm like, Jay, let's go buy these outfits. Let's like go buy all these outfits and then we'll sell them like on.
I'm into that. I like that. And I would love to be a like a crypto VR chat hoarder of like, you know, like hats and bracelets.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just so hard to see any functional product like that in the next year.
Well, we got to do this deep dive in Decentraland. I feel like Decentraland is the closest thing that we could actually try now that involves like a little bit of that like gamified real like virtual world trading. So
let me just ask you this question then about this, and then we can, and then we can close up. But like, if you were to bet your life on this, right? That right now, if you got like the best 20 minds in Ethereum together and you told them, all I want is a game in which you walk around, you kill some, you know, wolves, you know, and the wolves give you gold.
You beat a dog to death.
You get like a little bit of gold for each wolf that you beat.
Yeah.
And then you amass that gold and you go back into town. There's a whole bunch of other people in a crypto in that town and you can buy things from them. And you can, like, get rare items, like, hidden in trees and shit like that. And
this
sometimes
is a weirdly specific description.
No, it's, like, a basic description of any multi, you know.
Mud.
Yeah. Or, like, a MMO or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you think that they could build that?
Like, launching this month or, like.
Like, let's give them
2019?
Yeah, let's give them a year. Do you think they could make
it? On Ethereum.
Yeah.
I think Ethereum itself probably needs to be updated before it could really support something.
Okay.
But I think that they are in a rush, not towards that specific goal, but towards that kind of a goal.
A functionality.
And
it's
why I'm still holding Ethereum, honestly. It's like, I don't understand what got so much worse for Ethereum other than its price. It still seems like the best chance of realizing this big vision. And it still seems like with Coinbase adding all of that stuff, that they still see value in that vision. They who've captured the bulk of the value from crypto.
I thought last episode we said that all those ads were just their version of the airdrop festival.
I mean, they are, but airdrop festivals are powerful.
That's true.
And it was called, it is Super Airdrop Festival. Airdrop Festival. It's not your daddy's airdrop festival. So to me, that still remains the like the best shot out of this hole. But I think we might be talking towards like late 2019. I'm not expecting any January launches.
Oh yeah, me neither.
All right. See you next time.
Yep.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Tuesday, December 11th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $3,335.
That was Coin Talk. Coin Talk is edited by James Nicholson. Our partners in this are Medium. Hey, you have a few days left to get a gift subscription of Medium for someone you love. Medium.com/gift. $50 gets someone a whole year of Medium. You can find all of our episodes at medium.com/cointalk. That includes full transcripts, the entire year of Coin Talk, 50, 60 something episodes, all transcribed. You can read the entire year in pain, shame, and joy. I recommend it. We will maybe have another show this year. We'll see. I don't know what Jay is up to, but we'll definitely be back next year.